The fire made that open, by the devil we return.
Right. Welcome to In Plain Sight, Jeremy from Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org and smash that donate button. Send the much needed fundage to keep free speech alive. Mail your check or money order payable to RBN, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call your debit or credit card into Mike, and you can use PayPal as usual. Tonight, William is out. I heard that he's training up in Russia for a big fight out in the Siberian wilderness with Dolph Lundgren. He's going to train for some fight with a greasy Italian. I'm not sure, but that's what I heard. So I've invited Dr. Patrick Slattery and I to discuss some things going on in Eurasia. Dr. Slattery, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Jeremy. It's not all my Asia. It's Eurasia, too.
It's our Asia, isn't it?
It's our Asia, yeah. It's the our Asia, just like it's the our democracy.
Yes.
And living in the our democracy, it was nice to see the Biden up there speaking tonight. He can still form sentences some of the times.
I've heard that we're going to need an F-15 if we want to push back against the government. Is that correct?
Hey, if you need an F-15, I know a guy, a greasy Italian, who can get you an F-15, okay?
Just call Israel.
I'm just saying.
Maybe these conservatives can call Israel our greatest ally. We've sent them plenty of them, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know where you can get a lot of advanced weaponry these days?
Oh, from the black market? Weapons that we sent to Ukraine?
Exactly. From these Jews in Ukraine. I'm sure they're selling them at bargain basement prices.
Not that I'm going to go.
I think you can get them. They can get them for you wholesale.
I would imagine. So
wholesale.
Gee golly, I got some perfect weaponry for you at the right price. You can just see them right posing on tour. Selling this crap. Man, what a scam!
Yeah.
So I can see. There's some things going on. When I heard William couldn't make it, so I started doing some prep, and I got a little in over my head. There's three things I wanted to hit. Of course, there's UN inspectors inside the nuclear power plant in Ukraine. That's a big thing. The Nord Stream 1 has been shut off for maintenance. The headlines would lead you to believe that Russia's shutting it off because they're mean fascists. But then what I think I wanted to start with to help you, I wanted you to help me navigate through this. Serbia is beginning military drills in Kosovo. Now, I had to familiarize myself with the whole Kosovo deal. So supposedly, I guess back in like the 90s, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, Milosevic was supposedly oppressing ethnic Albanians. Okay. And so this led to a UN strike in Kosovo. And then in, I think, 2008, Kosovo declared independence from Serbia, right about the time that you had this Georgia-Russia conflict. So what I wanted to ask you is, what is the significance of Serbia doing military drills in Kosovo now that it seems like the U.S. and the UN, or I'm sorry, the U.S., UN and NATO have lost their power in that region? Is this significant and how so?
Well, I mean, Yugoslavia, which Serbia was the linchpin of Yugoslavia, you had a pretty significant wars going on in Yugoslavia in the 1990s. And of course, that area was also where World War I got kicked off. It's a lot closer to the heart of Europe than Ukraine is. So you had Yugoslavia was a country from the end of World War I up until, it started breaking up around 1992, it started breaking up. And it had an internal structure similar to the Soviet Union in that it had six republics within this federal Yugoslavia. So you had a central government, and then you had these six republics, which had a fair amount of autonomy, and they had their own ethnicities in them, their own language. So you had Slovenia, which was small, but it had a distinct language. You had Croatia, which the language is, the Croatian language and the Serbian language are really the same, except Croatian is written with Roman letters, Serbian is written with Cyrillic letters, and Croatians are Roman Catholic, and the Serbs are Orthodox. They were really the same people. It's just that the ancestors of the Croats were living in the Austrian Empire, and the ancestors of the Serbs were living in, actually, I guess they were living in the Ottoman Empire for a while.
So real quick, Nikola Tesla, I believe, was from Croatia, even though he was maybe Germanic. I think he was Germanic in ethnicity, Tesla, and he was from Croatia. I remember that in my history studies.
Okay, well, I mean, I think of him as being from Yugoslavia, but Croatia was in Yugoslavia. So I don't know which. Yeah, maybe he was a Croat from Yugoslavia. Okay.
Tesla, but go ahead.
He was Germanic or not. But yeah, so you had these republics. You had Montenegro. You had Macedonia. And Serbia. And Serbia was the biggest. It took it was maybe one-third of the territory and maybe one-third of the population. But it was certainly the biggest. And inside Serbia, you had these two autonomous regions, one in the north and one in the southwest. The one in the north had Hungarians. It had a mixture of people in it. The one in the southwest was called Kosovo. So it was an autonomous region within the Serbian Republic within Yugoslavia. And the Kosovo, although it was kind of like the birthplace of the Serbian nation, it was like the Alamo. The Alamo, which is the birthplace of Texas, you know, Texas independence, a battle that they lost. There was some battle that the Serbs lost in some plains in Kosovo, but that was like the birth of the Serbian nationhood. And the thing is, during the course of the 20th century, that Kosovo region went from being about 10% Albanian and 90% Serbian to, by the end of the century, about 90% Albanian and 10% Serbian. The Kosovo people, the Kosovars, are ethnic Albanians. They speak Albanian, and they are, for the most part, practicing Muslims. Some, you know, there are Christian Albanian speakers like Mother Teresa. They exist, but the ones in Kosovo for the most part are Muslims. So, and they had a higher birth rate and probably a higher crime rate, and so a lot of Serbs just left, and so you wound up towards the end of the century with this region in that was part of Serbia, that where you had like an independence movement going on, and the of course the democracy gang at in the Pentagon and in the State Department decided to jump on that, and they bombed Serbia and extracted de facto independence for Kosovo. So for 9 years it was de facto. You know, it's like occupied by NATO. And then in 2008, they declared independence. And the thing is, the Serbians and the Russians have a long traditional relationship. They're both Slavs. They are both Orthodox Christians. And so they have this long relationship. And Vladimir Putin said, look, if you recognize as independent Kosovo, which had not been a republic within Yugoslavia, it had just been an autonomous region, that's going to set a precedent for like all these places in the former Soviet Union that weren't republics, that were autonomous regions, and that is a really dangerous precedent. Well, they did it anyway, and so and this is something when Russia annexed Crimea 6 years later after the Victoria Nuland coup d'etat. He cited the Kosovo, the NATO countries recognizing Kosovo independence. He said, well, you know, if you're going to recognize Kosovo, if you're going to rewrite those borders, we're going to rewrite these borders. And
so, I remember this incident in the late 90s. I was a young airman in the Air Force. I didn't understand the significance of it because I was interested in turning wrenches, drinking German beers, and picking up college chicks at Air Force parties. But a lot of my comrades were deployed to this, you know, under NATO. And I remember hearing about it. This was after, you know, the Soviet Union had broken up. And I guess if had the Soviet Union not broken up, I mean, if this sort of incident had arisen, Russia would have taken care of it rather than NATO swooping in. I mean, because Serbia and Russia have been longstanding allies for 200 years. Is that correct?
To a large extent. Now, the one thing is, between World War II and the end of the Cold War, Yugoslavia, although it was communist, was very independent, and they were one of the founders of the non-aligned movement. So their leader, Tito, who was, I guess he was half Slovenian, half Croatian, but he was their leader. And, you know, some people like him, some people don't like him, but he held things together, and he was, he broke with Stalin, and he was just very independent. They were never part of the Warsaw Pact, but still the Serbian people and the Russian people do have a longstanding, friendship and relationship. And the thing is, had the Soviet Union not broken up, a lot of things wouldn't have happened because, you know, it could lead to World War II.
So, hey, real quick, we're getting background noise. I don't know if it's you or Mike. It could be me. Oh. Jump in anytime you want, Mike. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, In the late 90s, when it was assumed that, you know, Russia was under control of the West, NATO felt bold enough to come in and do this. And now that it's beginning to be understood that the West has, you know, practically no power anymore, militarily or diplomatic or, you know, politically, it seemed, you know, we've got this article from RT, Serbian army units kicked off exercises near the boundary with Kosovo on Wednesday, which I'm thinking that this may be, you know, Serbia wanting to do a reversal of everything that's happened in the last 20, 25 years. Am I reading this correctly?
Well, I mean, that's
a, read too much?
That's the thing to wonder about. And I've been to Yugoslavia. I don't pretend to be an expert in it, and I don't really know what the Serbian leader is thinking. But here's the thing: it's Kosovo is full of Albanians, and you know, in some ways, I think Serbia is just better off without Kosovo. And there is still a Serbian minority in Kosovo, and I guess there has been over the past 15 years or whatever, 15, 20 years, has probably been a certain amount of self-segregation. So it's possible that there's a distinct sliver of Kosovo that is inhabited by Serbians, and it may well be that that the Serbian leader would like to annex that part of Kosovo and not the whole thing, but I really don't know.
But I mean, I guess they're feeling emboldened to do this because they sense that the American and NATO, you know, influence or military presence has been diminished in light of this whole Ukrainian nonsense.
Well, yeah, you would think that if anybody needs to be emboldened, that this would be the time to be emboldened, because you know, it's not just that that the West has shown ineptitude, but they've shot their wad. They Like their arsenals are depleted. So what are they going to do?
So yeah, significant areas to watch. I guess this area here in Kosovo, you know, as well as the outcome of Ukraine and even Taiwan. I guess, you know, China is flexing quite a bit since Pelosi and our politicians have decided to go around Xi Jinping and visit Taiwan, basically slapping them in the face. So it would be the final insult to the American empire for all of these things to happen, I suppose.
Well, it would be good. I don't want wars. I don't want a lot of chaos or anything. But it's a good thing that the world is moving away from unipolarism, and that the United States and its NATO allies are no longer in a position to dictate. When you get down to it, I think, with the exception of the NATO allies and maybe Japan and South Korea, maybe a couple of East Asian countries, the world's really sick of the so-called West. They're sick of the West. The Africa is, Latin America is, South Asia is. They're sick of this. And a week or two ago, when they in the UN they tried to do some sort of anti-Russia resolution over Ukraine, they could only get, what, like 40 or 50 countries to go along with it?
Yeah.
Other countries, people are sick of it. And, you know, what's happened as a result of this Ukraine stuff is you're going to have massive food shortages in Africa. And, you know, you're having all sorts of economic repercussions in big hunks of the world. And you're going to have real bad repercussions in Europe. We're having them here, too. It's also stupid.
Yes, and I too, along with you yourself, don't support war of any kind. This should all be handled diplomatically, and it could have been if we had real statesmen, but we don't. We have incompetent shills and puppets, and still not sure who's in control, but whoever it is seems to be on a kamikaze mission to destroy the West. That having been said, that gets us to the next headline before the break. The Nord Stream 1. So the oilprice.com is where I get this. Russia officially halts natural gas flows via Nord Stream 1. The headline would lead you to believe that Russia, you know, the fascist state that hates everybody in the West, is persecuting them. But really what it was maintenance. But even when flows are going to come back, it's only going to be like 20%. But I mean, it's really, they're trying to paint this as Russia cutting off, you know, gas, but it's really the Western sanctions, right? I mean, it's not Russia that's doing this. They don't want to stop gas to Europe. They want to make that money. So it's really the Western sanctions that are causing this, you know, gas shortage in Europe, and this, I don't know what they're going to do this winter, I guess freeze, or install wood stoves, probably, which is great for the environment, I suppose. But coming up rapidly on the break. So we'll get back to this, and we'll get Patrick back on. Patrick, you had a final word before the break?
Well, I think Europe will be reducing its carbon footprint over the winter.
Back on the other side of the break, we'll take a call on Endpoint Side.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? I have another update on the fundraising situation. We can accept PayPal through the RBN site. You can mail in cash, check or money order, made out to RBN. The postal address is 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. If you send in a check or money order, it needs to be made out to RBN, just the three letters, RBN. And if you have any questions, call 800-724-2719, extension 3. Feel free to call on in on this issue, and we'll try and get you squared away. The network thanks you.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Okay, we're back. Endpoint Sought, Jeremy from Kentucky, joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. It's a Patrick and Jeremy part three for the week. What did you do to deserve this? Your RBN listeners, isn't that enough? So we're just going over the Kosovo thing with Serbia doing military drills. We talked about Nord Stream 1 being shut down for maintenance and Russian sanctions from the West, starving Europe out. Well, you had a caller. Did you have another point, Patrick, that you wanted to get to on Nord Stream 1?
No, I want to hear the caller.
All right. I think we have Marcus in Idaho holding. Marcus, what's your question for Patrick and I?
Good evening, Jeremy and Patrick. I was questioning why the U.S. is so close with the Ukraine. I've been pondering that in my mind for the last 2 years. Why do we have Ben Min and the other lady from the U.S. State Department? Why are we so close to this nation? Why do we have Hunter Biden and all of this interactions with this nation that seem to be under the radar? Why do we have all of these biological labs in this nation? Why not Georgia or Ossetia or Lithuania? None of these other nations really matter to us, it's seemingly, that's Ukraine. And then today it dawned on me. I was at the a thrift store and I saw a movie about the nuclear site, which closed down because it exploded. It just escaped my mind. I'm sorry.
Chernobyl.
In the 90s. Chernobyl.
Yeah, Chernobyl.
Chernobyl is in Ukraine. So we made all of our ties after Chernobyl. We connected with them as far as the State Department, the CIA, the Trilateral Commission, all of our energies went into that and brought all of these connections back to ourselves and began to facilitate this connection between these two states.
Yeah, Patrick, you can answer that one if you can. I'm going to get started. Whenever you come off of mute, you can jump in. From what I understand, the Ukrainian government before 2014 was very friendly to Russia. And now the gas supplies to Europe go from Russia through the Ukraine. And in 2014, you had the Maidan coup where they installed this Western-friendly government and anti-Russian government. And that was right about the time that the Bidens had their dirty deals with energy businesses there in the Ukraine. This is all documented on the Hunter Biden laptop that the FBI sat on since summer of 2019, as far as we know. Go ahead.
Jeremy, I'm indicating that this goes way before any of that, and back into the 1990s, that those molecules, those connections were formulated back in the 90s and started to, 89, right, 84, something like that, when Chernobyl happened, and then started to just increase and increase. We're not talking about 2014. We're talking about way before that.
So, Patrick, you got this one?
Yeah, I don't really think Chernobyl has that much to do with it. But when the thing is, Ukraine was by far the biggest and most important of the non-Russian republics in the Soviet Union. So the Soviet Union, it was that this giant Russian Soviet Federated Socialist Republic that made up about 75 to 80% of the landmass, thus was Russian Republic just itself was twice as large as the United States. But then these peripheral republics, but Ukraine was by far the most important, by far had the largest population of the republics outside of Russia. So the Russian Republic might have been 155, 160 million. Ukraine was like 40-something million. So it was significant. So that, and of course the Ukrainian people really aren't that different from the Russian people. And
I really, Patrick, don't think you're taking this into consideration. A nuclear power, which melts down and has this huge meltdown, is going to have an effect upon the whole world, right? We're talking about that 40-plus years later. So you would have an interest in our State Department and the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations and all of those different huge entities which would want to find out what's going on with this.
Hey guys, they would want to make
connections with other people, with those people inside of the Ukraine.
Hang on to that thought, Marcus, and we'll hold you over after the break.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back, to the U.S. I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Pinpoint Saw It with Jeremy from Kentucky. Tonight, William is out and Patrick Slattery is filling in. We are on the loose talking about the Chernobyl disaster in April of 1986. Patrick, if you could address, we have a caller on, Marcus, if you could address his question on Chernobyl and the significance of that.
All right, well, Marcus seems to think that I'm missing the point he wants to make, so let's let him rephrase his point.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Okay, so we've got people like Fiona Hill and Alexander Vindman, and who knows how many other people inside of our government, which are so connected with Ukraine, that we are going to give them billions and billions and billions of dollars a year. And the State Department, Fiona Hill, is going to okay that. We've got other people inside of the CIA, inside of the NSA, that are going to okay that. We're going to give them billions of dollars. We're going to upgrade their capacity to make mass weapons against the American people, why would we do that? Why would we look to Ukraine other than it's an industrialized nation? But so is Germany, so is France, so is Spain, so is numerous others. But their connection with the KGB and Chernobyl at the time of the meltdown and the breakup of society in 1989 when Perestroika happened, we were definitely involved in going into the Soviet Union and becoming part of their structure, their archaeological structure, which was going to, hierarchical structure, which was going to tell, determine what's going to happen in the future. At that time, we'd are, oh, 89, 86, we'd already had, 13 years of Brzezinski's Trilateral Commission, and the CFR had been along for a long time. We had determined that was a priority place. So the people in the NSA, the people inside of the government, the people inside of the CIA would have determined that is a very important spot. And so why Ukraine, I ask myself, why are we so involved with Ukraine? Why do we have so much involvement in them? Why are we going to give them so much money? It's because we invested in them since Chernobyl. And that time, when Chernobyl happened, we decided we needed to go in there and find out what happened with that. But since then, that yeah. was the opportunity, the open door, which allowed the New World Order government inside our echelon to be able to infiltrate and totally set itself into the bedrock of Ukraine. And that's why we are there now, because we are the bedrock of Ukraine. It's not like they are a separate nation.
I mean, you got a lot of elements there, but I don't see how Chernobyl is a linchpin in any way. The Chernobyl accident happened. You had a meltdown. You had massive release of radiation, and now you've got basically a no man's land, pretty significant size no man's land up there in northern Ukraine near the Belarus border where Chernobyl is. And the Chernobyl plant itself has been they had. Hundreds or even thousands of sorties of helicopters dumping concrete onto the plant to entomb it. So, the plant itself has been entombed. I don't know. And of course, at the time this happened, you did not have Americans running all over the place.
Chernobyl is not important. It's never let a good crisis go to waste.
That crisis happened in 1986, and there's been plenty of other crises that happened since then. When America really got its hooks into that region was upon the breakup of the Soviet Union. The Russian government, which emerged as the successor to the Soviet Union, they invited in American advisors. From the Treasury Department, from Harvard, so you had Lawrence Summers was over there.
Jeffrey Sachs was over there.
Huh?
What about Serbia Herzegovina? That whole conflict in there. It's like, why is the UN trying to push people?
You're going back to Yugoslavia. That's a different country. Okay. I gave you a long time to talk. The reason that we're so involved in Ukraine is because Ukraine is a very large and highly populated country that was part of the Russian Empire. It was part of the Russian nation, part of the Soviet Union. It's got an extremely long border with Russia. It's extremely close to the main Russian population centers. And by turning that into some sort of NATO protectorate, then you've got the NATO military right up in the heartland of Russia. That's why, and it's a way of threatening Russia, a way of intimidating Russia. Hold on, man. And Russia and Putin are in the crosshairs of our Zionist occupied government because they threw out, or because Putin threw out some of the main Jewish oligarchs and the Jews in America, in the American administration, like Alexander Vindman, will never forgive that.
But okay. Wouldn't it be a perfect opportunity, Chernobyl, for America to get in there and say, stick it to Russia, to the Soviet Russia, and get in there and just stick their prongs like a stingray inside of there and say, we're here, dumb. And that's why I think that was the turning point.
Well, it could have been, except in 1986, a crisis like that was not an opportunity. In 1986, Russia or the Soviet Union was extremely sovereign, and you were not going to get American officials into the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union did not invite anybody to come help with Chernobyl, and the Soviet Union came under a lot of criticism for not releasing more information earlier. But in 1986, you could not use that crisis in order to penetrate into the Soviet Union.
2 years later, they broke up. 2 years later, Perestroika happened, and they were
five
able
and
to,
a half years later. They broke up five and a half. So Chernobyl was in April of 1986. The breakup of the Soviet Union was New Year's Eve 1991. So that's
right.
five years and 8 months. That's
right.
A long time.
Small period of time.
All right, we're going to have to move on, Marcus. I think what Patrick is saying, that the significance of the Ukraine today is because of the Maidan coup in 2014 and the establishment of an anti-Russian government in 2014.
The significance of Ukraine is its size and proximity to Russia. And because of that significance, you had the Maidan coup. And because of that significance, now you're having this blind support for the anti-Russian government in Ukraine, the Jewish government in Ukraine.
Because the ultimate goal was to put NATO weapons on the border of Russia. That seems to be what there's a lot of other sides.
The border of Russia, but really, I mean, this is well within historic Russia.
Right.
Historically, Ukraine had been part of Russia. They'd been part of the same state for many, many centuries.
Like I've said before, it's tantamount to putting, if a foreign government wanted to come and put, nuclear missiles on the border of Texas, if Texas had, declared independence or whatever.
It would be like putting nuclear weapons in, what was I going to say? Like in Texarkana, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, we appreciate the call, Marcus. We offer full freedom of speech, but I don't know that you were connecting with what Patrick was saying, but that's the best we can answer your question. Let's move on to other callers. The show is waning on. Joe in Florida, what's on your mind?
Hey, yeah, Jeremy. Hey, Patrick. How are you guys?
Great
show this afternoon, by the way, Patrick. I love your deep dives when you do history deep dives. However, I will give you one criticism. I don't know. Is there any place that you don't record a show? We heard we started with the cicadas, and then I don't know. At one point, it sounded like you're in the house, and like you put the phone down. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, you're just kind of going about your chores. Forgot that you were actually hosting a show. It was authentic. I'll give you that. What's that?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I had my phone in my pocket, and then it just came on and started, it's just started, like, doing some sort of weird advertisement. What was that all about?
I mean, authenticity is the watchword on RBN. You can never be accused of not being authentic. But I didn't like the cicadas. I will say that, although I know I've been accused of being an anti-cicada.
So you're with me on the pro-cicada ledger, right?
No, I am anti-cicada. I'm with Mike Rivero.
You and Mike. I met with Mike on the White Boy Summer road trip, and we had lunch together with the lovely Lady Claire. But we never solved the cicada question. We didn't breach it, honestly.
Guys, I got to just say, Joe, you're gonna have to cool it with the anti-cicada remarks.
Okay. All right. There you go. Right on cue, Jeremy. Right on cue. I like that. Yes. Some of my best friends are cicadas. But I do want to say this one thing. It's about Zaporizhzhia, about the nuclear plant. Okay. I saw a report tonight at ABC World, Evening News, one of these normie mainstream things. It was absolutely preposterous. They go on and they're talking about, thank God that the IAEA observers are now in. Okay, now in my mind, a red flag is already going up. But the amazing part about this report, it was on ABC World News tonight, whatever, they do like a four-minute report, and they talk about, oh, they're so grateful the observers are there. Not once do they mention, I think she said briefly, the nuclear plant parts of the waste area were being shelled, okay? But not at any point do they mention two facts. One, that it's under Russia's control, and that, two, the people that are shelling it or firing missiles at it are the Ukrainians, the Zionist Zelensky. And what I'm saying is I'm getting very concerned. I don't know if you put it to sort of put this on the radar, because when I hear IAEA, my mind goes immediately back to the shenanigans and the BS that were pulled at the beginning of the Iraq War. I mean, it seems to me now it's actually kind of dangerous that the IAEA is there, because I wouldn't put it past them to plant something or be some kind of a shill to dredge some false flag up there against Russia. What do you think?
Well, there's no doubt that the bulk of the people in this IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, that the bulk of this delegation are from countries that are anti-Russian. So, yeah, I mean, there's good reason for that kind of concern. On the other hand, the Russians really wanted these people there because the Ukrainians were making this really ridiculous argument that the Russians have been using this nuclear power plant as like some sort of base for shelling civilian territory. And, you know, that it's just doesn't make any sense. There's no corroborating evidence for it. And so I think the Russians are very anxious to have this group there, and the Ukrainians were trying to block it. And in fact, Alexander Mercolis, who has been covering the Ukrainian war very thoroughly, says that there's some reports that the Ukrainians actually attempted some sort of stealth commando raid on the nuclear power plant, which is bizarre, and I don't know if that happened or not. But at any rate, the Ukrainians did not really want this IAEA to be there, because what else can they find except that the Ukrainians have been shelling it?
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, I understand. That's true. I mean, the Russians, like, attacking that or exploding or bombing that nuclear facility makes as much sense as Syrians gassing their own people. That story that came out, which got a lot of attention in media and was being pushed by mainstream media. Oh, of course Assad is bombing, it's gassing his own people. I see the potential for this happening here, because the way our media covers this story is absolutely total inversion. Anything that Zelensky and his Zionist thugs are doing is somehow Russia's fault. It's really disgusting. I get very sickened just by watching even the slightest mainstream media report. You know, it's a complete inversion of everything that's going on there. I mean, it's very dangerous to have the situation anyway, but then to know that what they're going to report is the exact opposite is sickening.
Yeah, I used to try to monitor some mainstream news, and I got to the point where really it is just too sickening. So I don't monitor any electronic news. I'll just monitor maybe what the AP or one of the, you know, the news wires say, because I can look at it and then just stop, right? Whereas if you're watching a program, you're kind of stuck with it. So
yeah,
but
I guess you're right.
Somebody needs to monitor. And
I don't want it to be me though.
More callers. Let me just go on record as saying that it's not all cicadas that make racket and keep you up and interrupt Boomer barbecues. And I know a cicada that's not all bad. He lit on my finger the other day.
It's only the Ashkenazi cicadas.
The Ashkenazi cicadas are a little bit of an issue, but no, and they're not really cicadas.
Like, because they're noisy.
Yeah, they're not really cicadas. They're really, you know, another group. Thanks a lot, Joe. Gotta move on.
Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, man. Let's go to Dan in Washington, last caller of the night. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I had a question about what Patrick thinks about this talking point that Reagan defeated the Soviet Union with military spending. I was reading about Gorbachev, and sounds like a really good man, and he, you know, kind of reversed the Stalin policies, and I think a lot of that was necessary to, you know, and I think he, declassified, like, the opened up the Soviet archives. But it sounds like, I mean, my theory is Bush and these Zionists and Reagan, they already had the Iraq war planned out, kind of, probably in the mid-80s they were talking about or thinking about it. And I don't think that the increased military spending had anything to do with the collapse of the Soviet Union. I think it's like just a neocon talking point. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there was an arms race going on, and at some level, there was probably a conscious effort in the United States to ramp up, in the Reagan administration, especially during the first term, to ramp up the arms race to levels that would put a strain on the Soviet economy. So I there was probably that strategy there. But Reagan himself, and I didn't give him credit for it at the time because I was, you know, very anti-Reagan. But in retrospect, Reagan himself, even though he was starting to get a little bit senile and whatnot, he apparently had become very alarmed at an incident that had happened maybe in 1984 or so, where there was something happened, I don't know, a flock of birds or whatever, and the Nordcom or whatever the military group is that looks for incoming missiles over the Arctic Ocean from Russia, from the Soviet Union, they reported incoming Soviet missiles, and it was a false alarm. And you know, Reagan was just minutes from having to make a decision on a retaliatory strike, and that really freaked him out. And so he developed a very good working relationship with Gorbachev. And the two of them, you know, at one point they met in Reykjavik, Iceland, and agreed in one-on-one talks to abolish nuclear weapons. And at that time, you know, China had a tiny arsenal and France had a tiny arsenal, but it was almost all the nuclear weapons were in Russian and Soviet hands. Well, Reagan's handlers, George Shultz, and who was Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, would have none of that. But it still wound up becoming a treaty where they eliminated the most dangerous class of nuclear weapons, which were these mid-range nuclear weapons. So, and as far as planning the Iraq war, like during the Reagan administration, that was during the time of the Iran-Iraq war, and the United States was, for all practical purposes, on the side of Saddam Hussein in that war against Iran. So I don't know, but I think Reagan and Gorbachev had a good personal relationship, and people in Reagan's administration were much more suspicious. Reagan had this attitude, trust but verify, so he wanted verification. But yeah, I guess your main point was this talking point that the arms buildup overturned the Soviet Union. But the breakup of the Soviet Union, I don't think it was inevitable. I think that Gorbachev was on the verge of transforming it into a kind of a confederacy. A less centralized confederacy. He was on the verge of that, and it could have happened, but it didn't happen. And I don't think anything was preordained there. And the things that wound up really immediately breaking up the Soviet Union wasn't the economy. It was partly ethnic desires for self-determination among minorities, but also it was this, I think, the ambitions of Boris Yeltsin, who had become very popular, and he used his presidency of the Russian Federation as an alternative power base, and, you know, almost brought the country to kind of civil war, but Gorbachev just said, look, I'm not going to fight a civil war over this. And he basically saw the handwriting on the wall and let the country break up in order to avoid civil war. That's my take.
Yeah, I maybe not so much Reagan, but I think Bush. By the time the Iraq war happened, he had a really brand new built up military, you know, and ready to go. You know, it's kind of funny how that worked out. Yeah. Where Yeah,
that first Iraq war, the Gulf War, was a very negative factor for Gorbachev's position and really for the Soviet Union. So if the Gulf War hadn't happened, Soviet Union may very well not have broken up.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks a lot, Dan. Thanks. And I used to be critical of Gorbachev because of that birthmark. I thought it was the mark of the beast, but really his mother drank too much port wine, apparently. Patrick, thanks for joining me, my friend. Stay classy.
It's a struggle, but I try.
And I'll be back tomorrow night with Health and Wellness on In Plain Sight.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.